John, I don't agree with all the people surrounding Nixon. Nixon to the POWs has a very special place because he made a very unpopular decision that was vilified by our media in 1972, the send the B-52s. And for 10 days, we didn't sleep. They bombed Hanoi around the clock. And I'm absolutely convinced if he'd bombed for another 3 days, there would have been no, would have had total surrender of North Vietnam. I'm not sure what we would have done with it. But he had them right down on the knees, and the reason we know is because the rats, who are more creative than we are, began to feed on us, and we had to post rat watches to keep the rats away because they couldn't get food downtown.
I agree with that outlook, and that may have led me, as perhaps the only State Department official, to support Barry Goldwater, who you'll remember wanted to bomb them back into the Stone Age. I believe, as apparently you do, that it would have worked. So that leads me to the second question, which I had tailored for Representative McCain, whose father I much admired, being from the same basic educational system. And you might have a reaction, too. Now, we all talk of this war as a war. It was a war, just as much a war as the Korean War. But Congress never declared war. And this enabled politicians like LBJ and ultimately Nixon to play games, not to demand of the Congress, which is the only constitutional authority to declare war, that we have a war and have it out and win and get our boys in a combat situation. So how much of your personal misery and your country's despair would you attribute, and would Congressman McCain attribute, to the fact that we never got around to declaring war?
Well, John, I'm glad I was able to miss the first question. I think there's no doubt that we have to have a number of criteria for the American people to support a war, which would then lead to a declaration of war on the part of Congress. I don't think that the Congress, being a representative body, would pass a declaration of war unless it had the support of the American people. I think those criteria are fairly simple. One of them is that it has to be very understandable in one or two sentences by the man in the street. Another one is that a clear United States vital national security interests have to be involved. And a third one is it cannot be very long in duration. And if it could meet those criteria, then I think that we would get that. If we go about it in the fashion that we went about the Indochina conflict on a very gradual basis, and the Korean War, police action, that kind of thing, then you will not have a Congress that will declare war because the people in the man in the street won't support it. So I would agree with you that our present president's words about never again should we send our men to fight and die in a conflict unless the goal is victory is accurate in this case as well.
Gentlemen, I too want to salute you both for the story that you've told today and that we've known over the years. My question, yes, Tony Buscarin, Le Moyne College. What happened to the seven or so collaborators?
We had, when we came back from Vietnam, there were eight enlisted that were charged. There were people who were seeking political asylum in other countries. We had two officers, Colonel Ed Miller, who was appointed by Jerry Brown to the Orange County Board of Commissioners, and Gene Wilbur, Navy captain. When they came back, they were charged because the eight enlisted there, the men in camp with them wanted to take justice in their own hands and discipline the men and physically beat the men, but the leader, Ted Guy, says, no, don't, we'll get back, I'll bring charges. When he came back, he brought charges. One of the eight committed suicide, Kavanaugh, out of Denver, and when that happened, all the charges were dropped against the other seven and the two officers that were with us. But they are still around, and Edison Miller is slithering from point to point, but was appointed to Orange County Board of Supervisors, and we, the POWs, I think John signed a letter. We signed a letter 10 days prior to the election that said not only is he not qualified to be an Orange County supervisor, he's not even qualified to be an American. That went to 110,000 homes, and 107,000 people turned out. And he lost as an incumbent, 8-1. We, in turn, were sued for $219 million, $1 million each, which has since been dropped, except for 29 cases. But they're still out there working with the Jane Fondas, the Tom Haydens in Santa Monica, so it's still a very active movement and a very real danger to this country.
If I could add to that. Just very quickly. you've got to remember the atmosphere of this country in 1973. The mood of this country was to forget that conflict and everything associated with it. And I think a decision was made on the part of the Department of Defense, although we disagreed with it, that those charges would be dropped. And one of them had Melvin Belli for a defense attorney, and the other one had Ramsey Clark, as he had promised when he visited Hanoi to defend them.
I'm not sure. Earl Cobile was one of seven people that were under two Cubans who were there. We called Fidel and Raul. They were there for about 1 year, and they all seven were interrogated until Earl Cobile went off the deep end. He lost his faculties, and for 3 or 4 months his cellmates force-fed him because he wouldn't eat, but finally eventually he died. But that was Cubans who we have since traced to Havana. They're in Havana now. Also, the Soviets were in the camp, and I'm convinced the Soviets had control over us, the POWs. The leadership there was, they had a military command and a political command. We never could determine who was in charge, but they kind of paralleled each other. But over all that, I think the Soviets were there, but the Cubans very definitely were involved. John, you want to comment?
Let me ask you a question. Speaking of the, I forgot what my question was. The Cubans were, there was a Cuban general who I believe became the Minister of Education in Cuba who was in Washington recently, and it was suggested that perhaps he had been in Havana and had been one of those responsible for supervising the torture. I wanted to ask first, do you have any information that has positively identified these people? Secondly, I'll take that first. It keeps eluding me. I had another point that I wanted to make, but I'd like to know who they were and what's happened to them.
The CIA tried very hard to track down Fidel and Raul, and they believed that they had some connection with him, having been trained at one time or another in the United States, which he used to brag to some of the POWs about. I wanted to make a point. Yesterday, the Republican Study Committee held a hearing, and we interviewed many of the, or took testimony from, many of the Cuban political prisoners who came back recently, the 26 of them. They described their treatment, and it was like reliving an experience that you've had. The treatment that they underwent is almost exactly the same as the kind that we underwent, down to even the most detailed accounts that they gave. And by the way, I was fascinated by, we asked one of them if they had ever met Mr. Jesse Jackson, and the answer was no. And I asked them why they were released, and it was interesting also, in case you didn't know, that all those people who were released had already completed their sentences, which is something that, and the treatment that they received, since so many of us in America are deeply concerned about human rights, if there's ever a human rights abuse story that needs to be told the American people, it's what went on with those people and is going on today in Cuba and the prisons in Cuba.
My other question, we had involved, I think, in the assisting in the arrangements for the people who put on the PBS film to get into Hanoi, an Australian communist journalist by the name of Wilfred Burchett, since deceased, in Bulgaria. Mr. Burchett had been identified as a KGB agent, and he was notorious in the Korean War for having been responsible for the torture of some of our POWs at that time. I wanted to ask, did Burchett play any role at all with the POWs in Vietnam? Did you ever see him or have any contact with him?
I never saw him. We were treated to his books. Every once in a while, they would give us one of his one of them was, I think, A Visit to a Liberated Zone, really some fascinating reading. And I could certainly understand why he turned to the communists, because he could never make a living in a non-communist country. I also know that the guy couldn't have been very smart if he chose Hanoi and then Bulgaria to live. But there's no doubt he contributed. He was their flack, and he had done that for a long period of time. But I never had any dealings with him. Did you, Red?
No, did not. I'm Hal Voorhees. For a time in 1969, I was running the Capture Document Exploitation Center in Saigon. And one of the things that we had captured was a cabinet full of 16-millimeter films that were largely propaganda films. And two of those films, I think, were of Wilford Burchett during one of his forays down in South Vietnam, but they were propaganda films for them. My question is, have those ever seen the light of day here in the United States that might be available for your rebuttal television series, Reed?
I can't answer your question, but to elaborate further on his involvement in us, Leo Thorsness, who was one of our Medal of Honor winners, was tortured to meet with Wilford Burchett and had about a 30-minute interview with him. I don't think he ever got directly involved with that treatment, but he did create, when he came there, again, somebody was tortured until they went down to meet with him. And that was the involvement that he had. I'm not sure, I've never seen those films since coming back. We did see them there because they showed them to us.
This will be the last question.
My name is Liz Capazzi. I'm New York City Media Chairman for Eagle Forum. My question is with regards to the policy, the military policy that we exercise in Lebanon. I can wholeheartedly support a strong military posture. Tactically, we didn't succeed. And because of your experience, your profession in the military, I'm very interested in your comments on that particular episode.
Lebanon was a no-win situation. It was much easier to insert our Marines into Lebanon than to take them out. My solution would have been about 6 months prior to actual withdrawal is to put them on Navy ships and each day let the ships get a little farther away and finally end up back in the States. But there again, that was a no-win situation. I see another situation developing in Central America, like Vietnam. Congress can create another Vietnam by withdrawing support, and history will repeat itself. We've got to convince congressmen that we need a strong national defense, as I believe the only way to have peace, and I pray every day for peace, is to be strong and convince the Soviets there's no profit in war. And I think until we reverse that congressional situation, history will repeat itself.
I don't like to disagree with the present administration because I happen to be a strong supporter of the president. I voted against and spoke against placing Marines in Lebanon, not because the United States doesn't have vital interest in that part of the world, but I was convinced that 1,500 Marines at the airport would not have any appreciable effect, and they would, I feared, and I wish that I were standing here before you and say that I had been wrong, that many of them would die needlessly. I will say, though, and I think it's important, that at least the present administration realized their error and got out. And maybe that is a wise move rather than getting the other fist stuck into the tar baby once we had one in. So, and I also share Red's statement about Central America. I'd like to point out to you, we are giving billions and billions and billions of dollars to countries all over this world. And yesterday, the House Appropriations Committee refused to give a relatively small amount of aid to El Salvador. And I'm telling you, we are going through the repeat of what we did to the South Vietnamese government in 1974 and 1975. They simply cannot exist militarily with the kind of monies and funds. The size of their Air Force is 7 T-37s. They lost half of their transport aircraft when their C-123 was blown up on landing. They do not have the kind of equipment. And let me just point out one graphic demonstration of the problems that they're having. I've been down there twice. In the Vietnam conflict, one out of every nine Americans who was wounded in combat later died because there was immediate helicopter, fast reaction evacuation, and medical treatment given. Right now, in El Salvador, one out of every two El Salvadoran soldiers dies because there simply is not the capability for medical evacuation and treatment which is necessary. I think we need to make the American people aware that there's a certain minimum level of aid that we've got to maintain down there or the stakes are going to be a lot higher in the future.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Red. Please join me in thanking these great Americans.
coffee break now, ladies and gentlemen, so we'll see you back at 10:30.